I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Witchery.
Today, on episode 15, we'll be discussing magical texts.
In witchcraft, we'll be looking at bookbinding.
Then, in Spelled Out, we'll be looking at bookbinding.
Today, we're discussing magical texts.
Yes, books, spell books, grimoires, books of shadows, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where should we begin?
Let's start with favorite magical or spell books that are already written.
Okay.
Instead of ones that we write.
Okay. Sort of like just the ones that we turn to most frequently. I would say probably for me, obviously the Judica Isles book that we referenced. Mm-hmm. Almost every episode at this point.
Yeah. It's become a problem.
It really is. And, like, I know that not everybody loves it, but it's, for me, it's just one of those things where it's a matter of percentages. Like, even if you don't like 90% of what's in the book, that's still, what, like 500 spells that are still decent?
Yeah.
Which is more than you're going to find. Was it 5,000 spells or 1,000 spells?
5,000.
5,000 spells. So, yeah, you're going to wind up with a ton of spells that are still totally usable. So I love that. Mm-hmm. I think that's great.
I agree. That's definitely one of mine.
And then I really like, there are a couple of books by Draža Mikaheritz. I can never say his name. I don't think anybody can ever say his name except him. Spiritual Cleansing, Century of Spells. He's also got one called Spirit Worker Spell Book, which I don't have that one, but there are several books by him that I really, really like. They're mostly hoodoo with a little European witchcraft mixed in, and I find that they generally have really good, really simple, really practical information.
Okay. One that I just thought of, which I don't think we've really talked about much. I think we've referenced it one time before, but it's the Green Witchcraft series by Anne Mora, is it?
Yeah, I think it's Anne Mora. She also goes by, I think, Aumiel.
Yes. Yeah. So some of her practical stuff is really has been useful. That, like that one weather spell that she has.
Yes, that's in the Green Grimoire, I think.
Yeah.
But, I mean, actually she has, I think, three other books that are part of a broader series.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember at least in the first book or two, I found a few things that I liked.
Yeah, she also has carols for Yule in one of them.
Yes.
Which I really enjoy.
Those are fun. Those are definitely fun. That was, I think,
they're fun.
Yeah, I think that was maybe the first time I had really noticed that Deck the Halls was just blatantly pagan.
Yeah.
So, that was fun.
Yeah. And there are more that were actually started out Christian, but, like, she changed the words. And they're really beautiful that way. I mean, because I love Christmas carols. And, I don't know, being able to put, like, a pagan slant on them makes them that much more fun for me. So.
Yeah, and they're fun just to kind of sing, you know, hanging out together, having hot cocoa. Yeah, I definitely like it. I've always wanted to put together, like, a pagan caroling group.
That'd be so cool.
Like, it'd be so cool. And I've got these really awesome, like, Wassail recordings.
Oh, I love Wassail.
The
drink.
Yeah, and, like, the singing that goes with it. Where, like, they do, like, the boar's head, as I understand. And they do this whole awesome singing. And I really want to, I'd love to put together a group like that. But I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think so.
Yeah. That's a lot more work than I can put in right now.
Well, where would we go to sing the carols?
Yeah, this is not exactly the region to be door-to-door pagan caroling. They'd be like, did they just say horned god? I always thought that was Santa Claus in that lyric. Yeah.
Anyway, interesting tangent.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I do enjoy those books occasionally.
We've mentioned them before, but the Scott Cunningham Earth, Air, Fire, Water, Earth Power series. I probably don't turn to them as much anymore as I used to.
Right.
But they definitely got me started in that folk magic path.
Well, and I wonder how much of, like, of that book started the groundwork for you and your knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely one of those things that, you know, I was interested in folk magic before that, but I'd never found a collection like that.
Mm-hmm.
And having it all collected in one place made it very exciting.
Yeah.
And so it kept me going.
Same here. I loved how it was done by Element, but also, like, you know, just snow spells and then mm-hmm. rain spells. I don't know. And using rainwater. And I don't know. I have very fond memories of that book.
Yeah. Yeah. Those were definitely great. And the bibliographies, I think primarily in Earth, Air, Fire, Water, because I think Earth Power didn't really have a bibliography that I remember. But the other one had a bibliography that referenced things like that Vance Randolph book.
Oh.
And so it kind of pointed me towards these other sources, which is one of those reasons that, you know, that I love
really
it.
Turn to.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah, it absolutely got me going somewhere else with it.
Cool.
Others from you?
Not that I can think of now.
I use Homan's Pow Wow's Long Lost Friend to pull a few spells from. So that's another one from me. And my favorite of the quote-unquote old grimoires
mm-hmm.
Is probably The Black Pullet, which is also sometimes subtitled, or The Mysteries of the Old Man and the Pyramids.
Interesting.
And it's the reason I like it is a lot of grimoires sort of read like stereo instructions to me. They're very ceremonial and so on and so forth. And okay, I get it. You know, it's sort of liturgical as well okay. as practical, but it's really, really overwrought sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you read the Red Dragon grimoire, very, very technical in some places. Lesser Key of Solomon or Greater Key of Solomon can be very, very involved as you're trying to conjure all the different spirits of the multiple levels of the hierarchy of spirits. It's just insane. But the Black Pullet, which is also fairly influential in hoodoo, has a little bit of that, mm-hmm. but it's all done in a frame story about this French soldier who's rescued by an old man living in the pyramids.
Now that I find very interesting.
It's very neat. And like the old man trusts him and teaches him all how to do all these magical spells.
Oh.
And in the process, you learn these magical spells, which I really like. It's very exciting.
Yeah. And plus it has that aspect of the storytelling being part of,
mm-hmm.
You know, magical tradition.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
And I mean, in any grimoire you find, you're going to have a little bit of that. Like the Black and White Magic by Marie Laveau, which is not actually by Marie Laveau. It's by NDPV Bivens. Bivens is the guy's last name. I don't know the actual initial arrangements, but something like that. And all of the spells are done as though somebody is coming to Marie Laveau and asking her for help.
Mm.
And so it'll be, oh, great mother, please tell me, you know, what can I do? My man is cheating on me. How can I deal with this? And the Marie Laveau responded by saying, my child, I have heard your plight and I wish to help you in your endeavors. And so then she'll give her the spell. That's interesting.
Very.
But I think it's interesting that other than the Black Pullet, almost everything we mentioned is new.
Yeah.
Why? Why are we so drawn to these newer texts?
I don't know. Why do you feel drawn to them?
Clarity. I mean, there's definitely a simplicity and a clarity yeah. aspect, which I'm sure people don't like. There are people in certain ceremonial lodges and circles, like the Cult of Sabbati, which focuses mostly on grimoires written by Andrew Chumley and Daniel Schulke.
Mm-hmm.
Which are very, very difficult to penetrate. The texts are incredibly rich with symbolism, and you have to really, really work to get anything out of them. And I think they're beautiful, but I don't get a lot out of them magically. But the clear, simple writing always appeals to me. Always makes it so that I'm like, okay, now I can go do the work and learn it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Yeah, the simplicity of the writing, that's definitely an aspect. But I don't know, I've never really felt the pull to read much older texts for some reason. Honestly, I think it's ease of availability when I was still really learning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't have access to those texts. I had, you know, all the new stuff that was being published, a lot of the Llewellyn stuff, you mm-hmm. know, that was carried by the store that I shopped at. So
it's what was at hand. Yeah. So it's what you read. And to be fair, that was, you know, early days of the internet. Mm-hmm. So you know, a lot of people can now go online and look up the Greek magical papyrus, apparently. The Greek magical papyri, which is the collection of ancient Egyptian and Greek magical writings. You can just pull those offline now. You can pull off basically the scanned visual images of those texts and see what they look like originally.
Wow.
For free in a lot of cases. But I remember when I was starting, at least, that was impossible. I mean, when the internet was text only at that point, that's human age. Yeah. What, you can put a picture in email? Are you insane? How are we going to survive the speed? But yeah, so like having access to that kind of stuff when we first started out probably was a big part of why we turned to those Llewellyn, the Scott Cunningham kind of books. Mm-hmm. That's just my opinion, man.
But why do we stay there?
Again, I think ease of reading, ease of availability. You know, it's a lot easier to find some of these books. You know, and I spent time reading some of these older texts too, but I don't know. The poetry of them grips me, but the magic doesn't.
Hmm.
Like, if I read a text by Chumley, and I haven't read much by Chumley because his books are incredibly expensive.
Okay.
Like, we're talking into the hundreds or thousands of dollars. And that's not the publisher's fault exactly. They do very limited runs of the books, so once they hit the secondhand market, they skyrocket. But reading those, they're gorgeous, gorgeous poetic invocations and, you know, working with different spirits and sigils of those spirits. But it's all very ceremonial and not very, that's not practical, but not very get down and get your hands dirty.
Direct is the word I keep thinking of.
Yeah.
You know, that's funny. I was just like, while you were talking, that's kind of like, I saw where you were going with that. And that's mm-hmm. kind of how I feel about it too, because sometimes having all this flowery, poetic language, it's never going to be as effective as just saying, hear us, and going to town and mm-hmm. talking to the, you know, whatever spirit you happen to be trying to get in touch with, you know, instead of using this hundreds of year old book of writings that you don't feel a connection with.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like our whole philosophy on we're American, so we're going to do American and Southern things.
Stuff, right.
So we don't talk like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we going to have a connection with it necessarily?
Hmm.
It's how I kind of see it.
That's interesting because, I mean, at the same time, like, when I do psalmic magic, I generally use the King James or New King James translation. Well, just because it's got a more poetic sound. But at the same time, like, I think you could use an new international version, or you can use, I'm kind of exhausting the translations I have in my head, but you can use almost any translation to get the same results out of the Psalms, I think. Just because the Psalms themselves are where the power of those spells resides.
Yeah.
So it's not so much about the archaic flowery language. But it's interesting that my personal preference is for more of the archaic flowery language in the Psalms. But when it comes to other stuff, I like it to be very clear, very concise.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know what? I'd say that it's not so much a matter of the individual spell having a few phrases that are archaically said. It's the whole instruction aspect of it that I want to be clear on.
Okay, what do you mean?
Like, if something is nothing but a book of ritual, it's not going to interest me the same way that something that gives you very, very practical advice on how to do it and then gives you, like, a little poem that goes in a ritual.
Okay.
You know, that's fine. That works for me,
mm-hmm.
I think. I don't know.
Well, let's move on then. Well, okay. I think we've exhausted this topic.
Okay.
So, I guess let's move on to just Books and Shadows and Grimoires.
Okay.
I guess, you know, writing your own, what do you feel about it? What do you prefer?
I think it's absolutely a wonderful thing to do.
Me too.
Like, writing your own spell book is, you know, it's a gift that you give yourself, and it's a gift that you can give another generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, passing it down to your kids is an awesome idea, even if they're going to write their own.
Right.
Them being able to have your book is amazing. Like, that's something I really love. You know, getting into old books, a lot of the old Pennsylvania Dutch, you know, like the Powwows book I was talking about, that Powwows book is one of many books like it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, almost every family had their own little book like that. And they would just keep it on the shelf next to their Bible. And they would pull off and flip through it and be like a recipe book of spells.
Right.
And they would pass that down generation to generation, and it was, and they would add to it as necessary. And that's kind of what I love, is that, you know, it's like a family recipe book.
Yeah.
Only it's for magic. So that's kind of how I envision my ideal spell book in terms of intergenerational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely see handing mine down at some point. But the hard part is I don't actually have one. I've started one a couple times, but I want to be so organized, and like, I'm such a Virgo.
You're so picky.
When it comes to that sort of thing, like, I want to be able to move things around, and I want to be able to, like, I really need some of those new erasable Sharpies where you can erase the ink.
Right. For 3 days.
For 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know. I just want everything to be perfect, and I know it can't be necessarily. And so if it's not, I get really, not upset, but like you said, just nitpicky with it. And it's not my vision of it. Mm-hmm. And so it bothers me. And I have this idea in my head of what I want it to be. I just can't actually translate it onto paper
mm-hmm.
a lot of times.
I can totally see that. And honestly, like, I've always had trouble doing that in a bound book form.
Yes.
Like, anytime I try to do a bound book, it always short circuits me. At some point, I'll get to a point in the book where I'm like, I really meant to include this earlier.
Yes.
Meant to do this at a different place.
Exactly.
But I hate doing it in binders.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I can't do it.
So, which is why...
Post-binding.
Post-binding, yeah.
Where you can adjust where things are, but it's still more or less firmly bound at the spine.
If you don't know what post-binding is, it's...
Stay tuned.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about it a little bit more in witchcraft. But it's, they mostly do them in scrapbooks, but I'm sure you can find them in journals and stuff as well. But there are two or three posts in the spine, and you can unscrew it and make it either, you know, wider to accommodate more pages or to take out pages and shuffle them around to however you mm-hmm. need them to be, which for me, that's the absolute perfect way to do a Book of Shadows, post-binding it.
Yeah, because you can really adjust it. And you can also sort of chain the postings to get, like, you can go from a 1-inch post to a 3-inch right. post, and all you do is basically remove the spine from the book
mm-hmm.
and get a bigger piece of spine material. And you can expand it into a much bigger book.
Right.
So it's very cool, and I love that idea. Currently, what I use, and I think you've seen this, is I have this little leather folio.
Mm-hmm.
And I just take pieces of loose parchment paper, and I'll write whatever it is I want to remember on there. And I'll fold them up and tuck them into that folio and just tie it up with the leather thong.
So it's sort of like you're collecting things right now
yes.
to put into a book later.
Right. But I kind of like the whole like packet of letters yeah. structure of it. Like
that's neat too.
It's kind of neat. It's not organized, which is a little bit of a problem.
See, that would bug the... shit out of me.
But at the same time, it's one of those things where, like, you know, there's people that have the messy desk, but if you go to them and you're like, I need this report from three right. months ago, they can just, without even looking, just grab it off the side of their desk.
So you know your folio really well.
Exactly. And that's yeah. why it's okay for me right now. But at some point, I would like to turn it into
mm-hmm.
this more formally bound up book.
Well, one thing I wanted to talk about that has become more of, not an issue, but become more of a something to think about with, you know, technology nowadays. How do you feel about either printed books of shadows or online? Like people who keep, not online, but people who keep theirs on their computer, like as a file. Or not, how do you feel, not how do you feel about the people, how do you feel about it working for you personally, because whatever works for you, that's great, and we don't want to take away from anybody
exactly.
who does that and who it works for them.
Yeah, exactly. Because those people that can do it, can keep it on their computer, no trees are harmed.
Exactly.
I'm like, that's an amazing thing to do.
Right.
So I'm totally down with that. At the same time, there's something about me, the romantic in me.
Me too.
That says, I need a handwritten book.
Me too.
And it has to be handwritten. I have to pin it. I have to draw the illustrations myself. I have to do the calligraphy myself.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to do it. And so help me, if I'm so much as make the wrong curly Q on an S.
Me too!
That whole page gets redone.
I know, the whole page.
It's ridiculous.
It's so funny.
Oh, it's so awful.
But yeah, I kind of feel the same way. Like, If it, like I said, if it works for you, that's wonderful. I wish it did for me because it'd be so much easier. But it just doesn't. Like the, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, we've talked about this before, but writing out words, the actual process of writing them has power in it. You know, mm-hmm. it, and honestly, I mean, you can lose information a lot easier than you can lose a book. If your computer crashes and you don't have a backup, Lord help you. Mm-hmm. So, and yeah, it's like you said, the handwritten.
Well, I mean, there's something about that. Like, even, you know, the passing it down. I mean, you have, you know, you have a loved one's handwriting.
Yeah.
In the form of a tattoo on you,
mm-hmm.
which is incredibly powerful.
Yeah, I love it.
And it's because you had an old letter from that person, right?
Right.
Or like an old, a piece of paper.
Right.
With that on it. Like, that's because they imbued that little piece of them into that piece of paper, and you were able to take that out and put it on you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing for me with doing a handwritten book.
So like, I kind of think of, like, the next generation again, and where they come to it, and they say, wow, you know, like, this is my dad's handwriting. You know, he put thought into this, and he cared enough to put this together for me.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still say that with something that's typed.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like it adds an extra special layer to
right.
it, kind of.
Right, yeah. Like, I have no problem sharing spell books or chat books of information
right.
with people at large. Actually, by the time you're hearing this, there probably will be a free ebook on the website
yes.
About cartomancy.
Yeah.
So check that out if you're interested. Free plug. Plug for New World Retreat. Woo! On the New World Retreat podcast. Who knew? Anyway. But yeah, so I have no problem with that. But for my personal use and for what I intend to pass down as an heirloom,
mm-hmm.
I want it to be handwritten. I want to have had myself all over it.
Me too. You know, I think, though, that once I got my book figured out, I would have absolutely no problem with typing it up and having like a web-based version of it.
Right, like a reference version.
Yeah, that I could go to if I was, you know, maybe if I didn't have my book with me or if I just wanted to show somebody something or...
Right.
And that would be maybe an even better way. That way you could keep your book that was so personal to you hidden mm-hmm. or, you know, kind of keep it special to you. You know, a lot of people have issues with showing other people theirs, which is understandable, you know.
Yeah, that's so. So personal. It's like we were saying, you're really allowing them into you.
Right.
It gives them a lot of access to your personality.
Yeah, so, anyway. Okay, this is making me really want to write one now.
Yeah, we really should, like, dive into that.
We should.
Yeah, and again, that's why the packet of letters version works for me, too, because it is sort of, like, letters to the next generation about
right.
magic, which I think is cool. There's a whole, you know, with traditional witchcraft, Robert Cochran wrote tons of letters back and forth to Joe Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States and to other people. And those letters are the way we know how to do a lot of that witchcraft. So letters really have value in that way, too. They can become
yeah.
their own sort of book of shadows. To be fair, those were all typed on a typewriter, which still has that little bit of romance.
I think, honestly, it's the romantics in us, partially,
uh-huh.
that, you know, we rely on the past more.
I know, which is so funny, because we're both like, oh, we want to be practical.
We're a bundle of contradictions.
We don't want florid 15th century language in our spell books, but we want them to be handwritten and bound in leather.
Beautiful.
With hand-drawn illustrations by Rembrandt or something. You know? It's ridiculous.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we are a bundle of contradictions.
We are.
So, anywho. So, yeah, other thoughts on Books of Shadows?
Well, this isn't really a Book of Shadows, but, you know, what about magical journals?
Well, what about them? I don't really...
Do you keep one?
I did at one time. I haven't in years.
Really?
Yeah, like, you're talking about a journal of, like, I've done this spell and this
Not
is the result.
Not necessarily, just, I mean, it could have that in it, but, like, I keep one. But I keep, like, this is how I feel about this, or I did this spell, you know... If it worked out, how do I feel about it? Sort of just kind of, this sounds really cheesy, but just like exploring my feelings
mm-hmm.
on what's going on in my magical life at that point.
Yeah, I think that's a chick thing. I'm kidding.
You're a chick thing.
Kidding, dude. Righteous. Anyway. Yeah, I don't know. It's just one of those things. I've kept a magical journal before where basically I was writing down, you know, I did this card reading. Here were the cards. Here are the results. And I've tried to start that up periodically, but I find it just doesn't do a whole lot for me.
Okay. You don't learn anything from it, really?
Not really, because I don't... Like, I'll go back whenever I do... Whenever I write poetry, I'll go back and read that poetry. Whenever I do, you know, Books of Shadows or spell books, things like that, I go back and look through those and realize it. For some reason, if I write journals, like, especially, like, I'm feeling like this today. Journals, magical or not, I just don't really ever reread them. Periodically, I might read them, but I always have this little twinge of embarrassment.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that you should. I'm not saying anyone should.
I always kind of do it with a journal just because I don't want anyone to read it.
Yeah.
And it's almost like I read it from someone else's point of view when I do.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, who's that person?
Yeah.
Like, I remember when I was studying with that gardener in Coven. Mm-hmm. That was part of their thing, was wanted to journal it. And one of the first things that they did was they wanted you to define witch. Mm-hmm. And then you were going to, in a year, you were going to write what you thought a witch was. And every year you'd rewrite your definition. I think it's a really neat exercise. But at the same time, there's this piece of me that's like, if I go back and read that first definition of witch, like, no.
I've mentioned this before, but I kept a journal when I was first starting out, like, before I even officially, like, thought of myself as a witch. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, here's the thing that I'm thinking about, and I'm writing this journal to, you know, figure out how I feel about it and kind of navigate my way through it all. And, oh my god, going back through it.
We won't be scanning those and putting those online anytime
soon. No, sir, we will not. I would be laughed out of the world.
We would give you some fuzzy bunny ears and a cotton tail and send you off into frou-frou glitter land.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. You couldn't pay me to let you read that.
So I'll be stealing it. Be watching for scans on the web, folks.
But anyway, so.
No, I know what you mean. It's embarrassing. It's difficult.
But at the same time, I don't want to throw it away.
I don't think you should. If it gives you some solace, some comfort, if it works for you, do it.
Yeah. No, I mean like my original one. Like, I want to burn it, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, but it's. That was me at some point, you know?
Right. Well, and I think that's where it's like. Like, I don't get rid of any of my old stuff like that either. Mm-hmm. Because I'm thinking at some point, maybe, like, my kids or whoever gets these next will find them and find some value in them. Mm-hmm. They'll read it. They'll be like, oh, I know a little bit more about him now. I know a little more about Corey. Or, you know, I know a little bit more about the journey from this point to this point to this point. So, I think there's value in them, but I just can't stand them myself, and I've given up on them. I'm just like, I don't, you know, if I decide to do it again, fine. If I don't, I'm fine with that, too. I prefer to focus more on making a spell book.
Right.
I know something I wanted to ask you about. This is going to be something possibly slightly cantankerous and contentious between us. Like, I know you use the phrase Book of Shadows. Mm-hmm. Not always. You know, it's just a generic term. It's just entered into the parlance of our generation. That's fine. However, rituals. Do you include rituals in your magical text?
I would like to, yes.
Okay.
Why? When I do write it.
Like, would you put them in separate sections? Yes. Do you incorporate them into the whole overall? I mean,
okay.
How does it work?
In my head, I have my book, you know, divvied out into different sections. One of them is rituals. Rituals for different holidays, you know, different, like, you know, Sabbaths, you know, new moon, full moon, whatever. Eclipse, you know, even stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I don't have any of this written or anything. That's just what I would like. That's my ideal. Okay. And then, you know, then there's going to be, like, practical spells that I've used and works pretty much every time. Like, for example, my finding spell. Mm-hmm. That would definitely go in there.
Recipe for Crown of Success oil.
Exactly. Stuff like that. And then, you know, there'd be tables of correspondences that I find work for me. Mm-hmm. You know, different stuff like that. I don't know. Is that what you were asking?
Yeah, I think so. Like, you basically would have a big book of shadows with a section for ritual and a section for magic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can see that. I don't know, like, for some reason that I would default to separating those things. Like, I want my spell book to be a spell book.
Okay. I don't see it as a spell book, though. I see it as a, just a witchy book. Mm-hmm. Like, I almost said how to be a witch, but that's not what I mean. Just, like, okay, if I were to have children and, you know, and they were 10 years old and I was to die horribly. Enough. You know, that would be awful, obviously. But, I mean, it happens, you know, okay. But then, so they know that I practiced this, but I wasn't able to really teach them anything about it. I would want them to be able to learn from other places and then mm-hmm. have my magical text and then go, okay, so this is what she did. Mm-hmm. And this is what she thought of this. And I mean, I don't really want a journal in it, but I kind of want like little thoughts to be interjected mm-hmm. in it. Like, oh, this is so lame. But you know, the Book of Shadows from Practical Magic.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want it to be like that, like a kind of hodgepodgey.
I think every person listening to this wants that to be their reward.
God, that the prop master of that movie needs a hug.
Seriously, like I just want to buy him or her very nice things.
Yeah. Can I just buy you a drink, please?
Seriously, like, can I buy you a sandwich? Just something to show my appreciation for your awesomeness.
Yeah, because it's just so witchy.
It is.
You know?
I don't know. It's amazing. It's so cool.
Yeah.
So you can buy those for, like, $300.
Yes. A lot more, actually, I think.
Yeah. But they don't, I mean, they're blank, and they don't have that fully developed feel.
Right.
Although I totally love the idea of, like, you know, gluing in a little like bug skeleton or
plants and like leaves and flowers. So cool. Yeah, I definitely plan to do that actually.
Yeah, but again, that's a spell book for me. Not that I don't see the value of what you're talking about with putting ritual in it, especially
so,
as like.
So would you have two separate books?
Yeah, probably would do. Well, I don't know because my ritual. This is going to sound funny. Like, I would want my rituals to be something I pass down through practice.
Okay, that makes sense.
And the spell book to be the thing that they could hold on to. But you're right, you know, they die at 10 and they've never really seen me do anything. They're going to miss out on that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that makes me even think of it.
But, yeah, I mean, so it almost like it is two separate books. Mm-hmm. It's just in one bound work.
Right,
is how I envision it.
And for me, it's just a matter of deciding if I would actually want to include liturgical references, rituals, prayers, things like that, or not. Or if I want this to be passed down solely.
You know, there's also, you know, you got to think about how sometimes it's good for rituals to change.
Mm-hmm.
And how, what am I trying to say? Sometimes they get, you do them so often, and they're so ingrained in you that sometimes they lose their meaning. Like sometimes that can be good because you don't have that paper in front of you. You know, you're not, you know what you're supposed to say, but you lose that spontaneity that you can have sometimes
mm-hmm.
and that organic growth that you can have in a ritual sometimes. And I don't know if I'd want to necessarily set in stone, this is how you do this for this particular time
right.
of year. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And it's I don't late, think I would, I'm sorry. I'm not sure if I'm making sense.
No, that makes total sense. You're right. You know, I wouldn't want it to become a static,
right.
unfelt thing.
Thank you. That is what I'm trying to say. Jeez.
Right. No. And even, you know, with the oral passage of tradition, but that's just it. I've never been in a situation where I was at a ritual that was off book, that didn't have paper, that was worse than an on book paper typed out ritual. Like, whenever people can work from a place where they know the material internally,
mm-hmm.
there's still room for elaboration. There's still room for change.
That's true.
But that core material is just, it's part of them. And I love that.
Yeah.
At the same time, I think you're absolutely right. I don't think that you can lock down the tradition into, you know, these practices. And if you deviate at all, you're not doing it right.
Right. Well, and again, thinking of future generations, I don't want them to necessarily read this and go, oh, okay, so this is the ritual she did every single time, every single Samhain she mm-hmm. ever went to. You know, because that's not true at all.
Right.
You know, every single Samhain I've had since I was 15, I've done something different.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
Yeah. In a way, I'd almost rather... Like, as it is, I've been writing essays about... This is playing overextending my hand a bit, or playing a little far from the vest. I've been writing essays about the holidays.
Okay.
That I personally observe and why they're significant to me, and hoping to publish those in a few places. But, like, those are the kinds of things I would leave behind. I'd like to, you know, leave a handwritten collection of those essays with folklore.
Now that sounds like a good idea. Like, to say, you know, this is what I think of when I, during mm-hmm. this holiday, this is what it, you know, this is what that evokes for me. Here's mm-hmm. some ways you can celebrate it.
Yeah, and like, here's, you know, Sal, you know, dumb supper. Yeah,
yes.
Here's a dumb supper. You know, this is how you would celebrate it, help do it with a dumb supper. And give them just a little bit of structure in terms of, you know, here are some of the things that go with it, without making it a rote correspondence table.
Right.
But making it a very, like, organic essay about what I think about the holiday itself.
I like that.
And then
a lot.
Expanding on that with a little bit of folklore and a little bit of folk practice attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how I focus on it. So
I will definitely have to keep that in mind.
Oh,
yeah.
Got some ideas there. We just high-fived. You didn't see it, but we did it. High five. Yeah. It's late.
Yes, it is.
Anyway. All right. So what's next?
Magical ink and paper. Or inks and paper.
Yes. Yeah, I don't really know what to say about that. I know that... Okay. I told you this earlier. I have tried making magical ink before. I did the lamp black method, where you take a spoon, hold in a candle flame, let it get blackened on the bottom, and scrape that off with a little index card into a tiny little pot mm-hmm. till you get enough lamp black that you can then add a little alcohol or a little water, mish it all up, and add your magical ingredients, a little tincture of whatever, and you have your magical ink. Okay, I've done that.
Okay, and you wrote stuff down with it.
I did spells. I used it to make spells.
Okay.
That was the biggest waste of my time.
Mm.
It was hours of doing that. Hours to get enough ink to do anything decent, mm-hmm. you know, to have a decent enough supply that I could use the magical ink. And in the end, you know what? The handwriting itself was way more significant. Like, having a really beautiful hand with my writing was way more significant than any magical ink. That's just me.
Have you ever done any, like, Dove's Blood or Dragon's Blood? Anything like that?
I did the Dragon's Blood tincture was part of what I mixed into the lamp black ink.
Okay.
It didn't affect it one way or the other. Like, the only way it affected it is, like, once the ink dried, I kept smelling the paper to see if it smelled like the Dragon's Blood, and it didn't. It didn't smell like anything.
Mm-hmm.
It was lame. But that's, I mean, maybe I was doing it wrong. Maybe it was just not.
Maybe it wasn't a good recipe?
I think it was a Cunningham recipe. Yeah. But it just didn't work for
okay.
me. That being said, I'm not averse to trying it again someday, but it's not a high priority on my list to do magical ink.
I have not used magical ink. I have used, a dip pen and ink, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like a quill.
Mm-hmm.
Just, again, for that, like, romantic, mm-hmm. older feel to
right.
it. And it, like you... I did not feel that it really helped much.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it kind of helps you get in that state of mind a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you sit down to, like, pay your bills with an ink pen, or, you know, the ballpoint, and, you know, to do your spells, you dip it like, you know, they would have mm-hmm. however many years ago. And so I guess I can see that merit of it, mm-hmm. that value, but actually adding to the spell, I haven't really noticed.
I think focusing on what you're writing, and I mean... I know that focusing on what you're writing could include using a quill or using magical
yeah.
ink. But for me, just focusing on what I'm writing and trying to use a good penmanship,
mm-hmm.
you know, good quality of paper, all that kind of stuff, that's what really makes an impact for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the paper?
I tend to like really good paper... A lot of times I'll actually use artist's paper
mm-hmm.
to do spell work. Occasionally I've used, for hoodoo, this is sort of an inversion of that. I've used plain brown paper, you know, like from a brown paper bag,
mm-hmm.
torn.
Yeah, that's actually pretty traditional, though, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's very normal in hoodoo.
Yeah.
Just because it's what was available.
Right.
But I like it to be special paper. I don't like to just grab a sheet of notebook paper and try to write on that. I don't like to grab a sheet of typing paper or copy paper. I'm right on that.
So you have like you know, you can buy blank artist notebooks, and yes. then you just pull that out whenever you need mm-hmm. paper for a spell.
Yes,
so it's exactly. pretty much like a blank spell book, kind of.
Yeah.
That you're.
Yeah, exactly. Only a lot of times the spells will get burned or
right.
get
buried
or put in water or something mm-hmm. like that. Well, speaking of that kind of a spell, though, you came across some really interesting stuff while we were researching for the show.
Yeah, in Judica Isles, of course.
Of course.
She talks about a couple of different things you can do with paper and spells and or just magical texts in general. One that I thought was interesting is she says you can whisper a text over a cup of water, which is then given to someone to drink. Or, you know, you could drink it yourself, and I guess it puts the, you know, the magic of that text into the water, and then mm-hmm. you take it into yourself. And
a bit, just from my perspective, sonic rituals like that would be mm-hmm. very common.
Yeah, definitely.
Very effective.
I wonder why it's a cup of water.
Well, water's fairly universal. It's also very absorbent. Sort of the neutral element
yeah.
takes everything else in.
It's true. It's a conduit.
Mm-hmm. You could probably whisper it over wine or whisper it over any sacred or semi-sacred beverage.
Hmm.
Have that effect. Probably wouldn't do it over a Diet Coke.
Aww.
I'm just saying.
You know my love for the DC.
That sounds dirty.
Yes, it does.
Anyway.
Okay, so another one is, Corey knew of this one, which I hadn't heard of it before, but writing down text, you know, certain blocks of text or even just a few words on paper and then dissolving it in liquid and then drinking it.
Yes, and to do that, you have to use rice paper.
Right.
Which you can usually get at Asian markets pretty easily, and you want to use a vegetable-based ink that's non-toxic.
Obviously.
Yeah, well, when you say obviously, but some people, that's not obvious. But, I mean, you could use, like, a squid ink. Would be pretty easy. I think they've got soy-based inks that you can use. Very, very cheap. But, yeah, you would just print it on the rice paper. And rice paper, if you put it in water and stir a little bit, it's going to break up and dissolve. And, you know, you may have a little bits of rice paper floating around, but... Yeah,
it's still drinkable.
It's still totally drinkable. It'll be like tiny little things of tapioca.
So that's very interesting.
Yeah, I haven't done that, but I just came up this week in a forum that I saw that. It's like, that looks awesome. So I'll have to do that.
Yeah. Another is wearing them as an amulet for empowerment.
My mother did that.
I've seen them in a Christian context.
Mm-hmm.
Where you...
she had the Lord's Prayer rolled into a tiny scroll and put into a crucifix.
Yes, that's how I've seen it. And, like, they pop open mm-hmm. a lot of times. Which reminds me of...
Cruel Intentions, where Sarah Michelle Gellar has the cocaine in her little crucifix. No, I popped open my mom's crucifix and saw no cocaine, only scripture.
That's good.
Her cocaine days were long behind her.
And the other one, which I thought was really interesting and would actually like to try, is you trace the words on an apple with a pin, and depending on the nature of the spell, the apple is then eaten by the spellcaster or fed to the spell's target. I thought you could also do this on a banana, because the banana would, the peel would, you know, turn black, and you could actually see the words written on it, but then when you peel it, you know, the fruit that you eat is fine.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You'd probably do that with almost any fruit that has a rind, like an orange.
That's true. You'd
be able to do that. Maybe not so much on a kumquat. Very tiny.
You could chisel into a coconut.
Well, I mean, people do coconut art all the time. That's the way you couldn't do that. I wonder if you could whisper the spell over coconut water and drink it. I wonder if you could whisper it over pina coladas.
Yes!
That'd be awesome.
Let's do that.
You like pina coladas?
Mm-hmm.
Getting caught in the rain?
I do.
Not into yoga?
No. I have a brain.
Oh, we can't go any further with that. That's just going to end in tears. All right.
Yeah, well, that's all that she gives. But yeah, any of those would be really interesting to try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really want to try that rice paper one especially. I think that's a really clever idea.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to try the writing on fruit.
Mm-hmm. And I'll probably try the whispering over water, especially with psalms, because I think those will be really potent. Like, I may even try that. I've tried praying over some of the oils that we've made,
mm-hmm.
but I may try whispering over, too, and see if that has an impact.
Okay.
So we'll see. All right. Do we have any more thoughts on magical texts? People exhausted that one?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right. Well, then, we'll take a little break here, let you listen to some fantabulous promos and advertisements of sorts. And then after that, we'll be back with witchcraft, with bookbinding.
Yes.
All right.
Looking for magical supplies that are handcrafted with natural, organic, and ethical ingredients? Visit Forest Grove Botanica, a folk magic and medicine shop for the Pacific Northwest, at forestgrovebotanica.com.
Hi, this is Kathleen, the hostess of Borealis Meditation, Geology for Pagans. Geology is the study of the Earth, so what better subject for pagans? Join me to learn about minerals, rocks, and other interesting facts and theories about the Earth. I can be found at Podbean, on iTunes, and Podcast Alley. Or just come on over to the blog at borealismeditation.blogspot.com.
Hi, I'm Saturn, host of the podcast Pennies in the Well, where we journey into the depths of the human psyche and the far realms of magic for the joys of spiritual development. You can find me by doing a search on iTunes or Podcast Alley, or visit my website at www.penniesinthewell.com, because there's nothing quite like slipping into the well.
Okay, so this is witchcraft, and we're talking about bookbinding. And I have actually, Corey and I took a class on bookbinding.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that in the magical relationships.
Oh, we did, didn't we?
Class. Yeah, I mean.
Oh, that's right, because they thought we were a married couple.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
But, so there are a couple different things you can do. You can do the post-binding, which is what I did when I made my book. Or you can do
Coptic.
Yeah, there's a Coptic.
Which is a type of a stitch binding.
Yeah. Or you can just thread your paper together. You know, you can make it as rudimentary or as decorative as you want. Like we talked about earlier, I prefer post-binding for magical text simply because you can shuffle around your pages. And you can expand it if you need more room.
So what do they need to do post-binding?
What do you mean?
Like, what kind of equipment do they need? Do you remember?
Yeah, sorry this is going to be not a very good segment.
Well, no, I mean, like, I know that almost anything you could need, you'd be able to find it like a craft or art supply store.
Yeah,
right?
I know we use cardboard. We just took cardboard box.
Those book boards, basically.
Yeah, and cut it out to the size you want your book to be. And then we glued paper around it so it, you know, it lay flat all around. And if you wanted to make it even more, you know, handmade, you could make your own paper, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But so you glue that down, and then you had a third thin strip that's going to be the spine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I remember that.
Yeah, and you crease it in a way.
Like you make.
This is really hard to describe without like having a video tutorial or something.
I'm sure we can find one on YouTube or something. We'll try to link to something that gives you some visuals on this. But no, what you're talking about is like you would take whatever the paper is that you used to cover the two book boards for the cover and the back cover. That same paper, you'll take a section of it that is about twice as long as...
Maybe even three times.
...the spine that you want.
Yeah.
And fold it over at the edges so that you can kind of create like a dense strip of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're going to punch through to bind to the covers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And,
is that right?
Yeah.
That's right. Okay.
And then you hold the... punch through as much paper as you want, and I believe you put the posts through the... There's this is so hard to describe. There's a piece of cardboard that comes over from your back flap.
Yes.
That sits there, and that's where you put the posts in, so it doesn't actually stick out the back of your book.
Uh-huh.
It sits against the back flap.
Yeah, we had to use a bone folder to get that crease in that cardboard, so that's something you'll need to look for. They're not all actually made of bone. You can get them made out of plastic now, too. Much cheaper.
Also a good thing to have if you're doing smaller books and not, like, you know, 8x11 size is a single hole puncher. Yeah. We had a special tool.
She had the best little... It was like an AWL awl, which is the, you know, it's the thing you use to punch holes in leather.
Only
this one was designed so that when you push down on it, it had this little casing over the tip that would rotate and just sort of slice out a circular section of cardboard.
Yes.
It was awesome.
And you could use it on multiple sheets of paper as well.
Yeah. It was awesome.
Yeah. So I still have that book, and of course, I've not written a single thing in it.
Not expanded it in any way.
Well, because I'm afraid to ruin it.
You're so precious. I haven't written in mine either.
Well, that's good. Yeah, you made just a regular bound one.
Yeah.
And it was in...
Well, it was post-bound.
Was it?
Uh-huh. Oh. Because that was the whole class was post-bound. I actually wrote to her to say, can you do a post-bound class?
Right, because she was going to do Coptic, because that was her specialty.
Yeah, and Coptic is beautiful, but Coptic is fixed, and we wanted something that would expand over and over again.
Right, and Coptic is when the pages, the folded pages of the journal are actually exposed, and you take the thread that you're sewing them together with and do, like, a little decorative crisscrosses,
Yeah,
I'm sure I'm butchering the definition of Coptic.
No, I think you're pretty dead on there. It's basically decorative threading.
Yes,
that binds the outside covers, and then inside you've got your what are those things called? The little inserts of paper, because each you don't do the paper all in one big bulk. You do it in little groups.
Right, like little booklets.
Yeah, like little mini booklets of like 10 sheets a piece.
Right.
And you'll bind all those together. Again, we'll try to have some links.
Yeah, and I know I have some pictures of the books that I made, so maybe I can dig one of those up.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know something that we didn't touch on at all?
What?
And this may be just me feeding my ego, but one of the things I love to do as far as like magical texts or interesting sort of slightly magical texts is getting journals that are pre-made journals and filling them.
Right.
Getting blank journals and filling them with stories, illustrations, spells, poems, that kind of thing. And so if you just know you're not going to be able to afford to go get all this crazy material to book bind yourself, find a journal you really like and fill that.
Yeah.
And I know that you're sitting there going, but the whole point is that I want to be able to make this. You could probably find a post-bound journal. Use a scrapbook.
See, I have looked and looked, and I do have one, but it's too big for my taste. But then I went and we looked before we took the bookbinding class, because we were on a mission. We were just obsessed with finding this post-bound journal, and couldn't find it anywhere. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we could if we actually looked on like a scrapbooking site or something like that.
Right. Yeah, I think the other big problem is we're also slightly impatient, so we went to stores looking for it, as opposed to if we'd gone to a specialty site, we probably would have found it, no problem.
Yeah.
We had it 2 weeks for delivery and gotten it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you could do it that way, and just fill a pre-made book with that kind of thing. You could even, arrange everything you want in another notebook, figuring out the order, and then hand copy it over.
That's true.
It doesn't leave you room to change anything.
Yeah, that's what... But anyway, this wasn't really supposed to be, like, how to make a bookbinding. It was just...
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I just don't want people to be disappointed because I can't teach them very well through just talking.
We want you to do this completely tactile and visual thing based solely on what our voices, our disembodied voices, are telling you to do.
Honestly, though, I would recommend a class if you can find one. It was... really helpful to take that.
It was great. So yeah, so that's bookbinding?
Yeah, I guess so.
Alright, so what do we have next?
We have bookbinding.
Oh, do we? Alright, well, we'll take a break and come back for Spelled Out and bookbinding. Alright, Spelled Out. Today we're talking about bookbinding.
Go figure.
But, thanks. But we're going to look at this from a different angle. By this bookbinding, I mean how to put binding spells on your books so they'll come back to you when you loan them out. The long and the short of this is that you're basically going to tie a knot in a piece of textile that you wrap around your book and keep that knotted until the book comes back to you. That's the basic fundamental how that spell works. Now, the way I usually do it is I'll get something like a hempen cord, or my favorite thing to do is yellow ribbon. because anything that you do with a yellow ribbon usually comes back to you. Which is, we've discussed yellow ribbons on the show before.
Right, for remembrance.
Right. And so it's, you're basically making people remember to give this back to you. Actually, right now I have a bunch of books out for a coworker who borrowed them when she was going on a beach vacation. And what I did for each of those books, I took a long piece of cord and I wrapped the cord around the entire width of the book and tied as tight a knot as I could without making it so that the book wouldn't come loose. Like the book has to be able to slide out of the loop that you make.
Mm-hmm.
So I made it as tight as I could, knotted it in there, and then I wrote the name of the book and the author on a little scrap of paper, rolled it into a scroll, and tied that and bound that into the loop as well, and then made a big chain of those. So it's all tied together. We've talked about knot bindings on the show before. And the basic idea is that when you knot something, you fix it. You fix it into a specific time or a place or an intention. And in this particular case, you're fixing it to yourself so that these books will eventually come back to you. I don't put any like curses or anything on these sorts of things. Basically, all I'm doing is making it so that they're a gentle but firm reminder that these books have a home and that they need to come home to me. And this current spate of books has been out for a couple of weeks, and that's fine because I only loaned them to her a couple of weeks ago. But every time previous to this that I've remembered to do these knot spells, I've gotten those specific books back. I've had one or two books that I've not done that on that have disappeared on me. It makes me very sad when that happens.
Yeah.
But that's just life. So yeah, so the basic fundamental structure of it is you're doing a binding spell on the books, binding them to yourself to come home to you. And that's it. That is book binding.
Very cool.
Magic.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Lane. All right. Well, do we have any, I guess we'll move into our wrapping up.
Yeah, I guess so.
Do we have any final business? I know we've got, you know, if you haven't checked it out yet, Strowlers, the Strowlers event. We've got a blog post on that. Definitely check that out. There's a couple of those coming up. I think we've got one that's already passed by this point. But there should be two more, I believe, in Boston and Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
That'd really be worth checking out if you're anywhere nearby. I'm trying to think if there's anything else we need to plug or to mention on the show.
I don't think so.
I will say, be watching the Compass and Key Etsy shop coming up soon. We've got some changes coming to that. We may even have them live by the time this is up. I doubt we'll have all of them up at this point, but we'll have some products available. I'm actually intending to have a chat book available as well on divination through playing cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go ahead and say that the sort of rough draft version of that with some of my really crappy photography is available for free through our website. We want people to have that if they want it. And if it's useful to you and you get something out of it and you happen to have some extra income floating around, please consider making a donation to the site. We'd love that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're under no obligation to do that. The book is free for people to download and use. I'll have a really nice bound chatbook copy of it available through the Etsy site, the Compass and Key site.
Right.
Fairly soon, I hope.
Yeah, with a little bit more information and everything too.
A little more information, a little more hands-on personal touch to it as well.
Yeah.
So hopefully that will be nice. So if that's your bag, then check it out. It'll be fun. Anything else, Lane?
I don't think so.
I feel like I've rambled on like an idiot this show. Like it's just been... Lane's tummy is rambling on like an idiot.
Oh my god, it won't shut up.
Yeah. So if you have any questions for us or would like to reach us, you can always email us at compassandkey@gmail.com.
And then you can contact us at the blog as well, which is newworldwitchery.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm. And we should be back in a couple of weeks with another episode. But until then, thanks for listening.
Be well.
New World Witchery is recorded using GarageBand on Mac. The song you're listening to is Homebound by the artist Jag from Cypress Grove Blues. It can be found on magnatune.com. Magnatune, your source for PodSafe music.